1 minute over, man, but it's a question that it would be. We'll go back to work here. We're to agenda item number 5. And again, I'll let John introduce this.
This is potentially an action item. You can see there's a proposed resolution. And this is a discussion, and I'll turn it over to Richard here in a second, about potentially a change to our asset allocation table in our investment policy. You received the entire investment policy. The only thing we're talking about changing is really this one page in this table here that we're proposing this. And I'll let Richard sort of explain the logic and the rationale for what we have here. So go ahead.
There's a couple of changes here that really trying to position then to the overall allocation of the plan to help provide some downside protection, if you will, in a rising interest rate environment and increase, if you will, overall expected return to the plan. And came up with these changes, ranges, and targets looking back over the last 15 years and rolling 10-year time frames and some rolling 5-year time frames to see what would have happened to the plan had we had similar allocations. And as it turns out, the returns would have been very, very good in these areas. And I know that some of this is new. I know that private equity is new. And the whole thought process was to trade off some public equity for some possible private equity, to trade off some fixed income, which forward-looking, if you will, has very little potential for producing any type of positive returns to the plan, for some additional MLPs where we can gain the income component and also some inflation protection and increasing REITs, which would have the same type of effect. Giving us some income component with some inflation protection. You can see the recommended changes here, and I would like to talk about what has happened, if you will, over the last 15 years looking at those types of allocations. And there's an asset allocation analysis that was also sent to you. If you don't mind, we could go through that before discussing how some of these, whether or not you want to make those changes.
You should have this booklet. If you want to look at the hard copy, you should have it. So that'd be up there also. But we hand those out. Asset allocation.
Yeah. And on page 1, are looking at the current allocation where we are. Target 1, if you will, a change in that allocation, and a target 2, what would happen with an additional change in the allocation. And like I said earlier, the from the standpoint of the policy, it's looking like moving towards target 1, which takes down, if you will, domestic equity by 5%. Maintains international equity, increases real estate by 5%, increases or puts a new allocation into private equity, which is the 5% from public equity, increases real assets or where we have Alerian MLP index by 5%, decreases fixed income from 35% down to, what the heck? Okay, yes, down to a 25% overall allocation, which is changing the public to a different, you know, mix within, you know, the overall asset allocation. And it's kind of labeled as non-core fixed income because these are fixed income strategies. And that fixed income strategy, I have a recommendation for the first step in that direction here, hopefully later, to try and maintain, if you will, the principal value in the fixed income area, because in a rising interest rate environment, as we saw earlier, the principal area in fixed income gets reduced as interest rates go up. And if we can find ways of providing additional opportunities for the managers in that area, I think we're going to be much, much better off. And if you go to the next page, which is page 2, this includes the last 15 years of the investment markets with the targets and the current and quite frankly the I guess the quote unquote sweet spot of defined benefit plans for years, which has been 60% equity, 40% bonds. Just as a kind of an anchor thing to see how we may move off of that to our current you know, overall allocation, which increased, if you will, the return and would have done much better over the last 15 years to target 1, which would have a higher return and a similar volatility of return, and then target 2, which is the same way. So it's looking at over the last 15 years, and this is a significant stress test, because in that 15-year time frame, we had 2 of the worst 3 equity markets of the last 100 years in that one 15-year time frame. Now, I, for one, hope I never see that again. But it's good to, you know, to say, okay, this, if we're going to do a stress test, how would this have worked out? And quite frankly, having the overall allocation with target 1 exceeding your current interest rate assumption on the plan by a little over 1%. Is a significant, if you will, milestone. And I think that's very, very significant. Current allocation would have just barely exceeded it, and then target 2 significantly exceeding it. If some point down the future we want to move more towards that additional diversification. If we look at the last 10 years, the same type of relative return comes into play. The overall returns to the portfolios move up because we move out of part of the downside of the initial bad market at the beginning of this century. And then on page 4, is a number of rolling 10-year periods, and in each one of those periods, from 2011, 2010, 2009, 2008, same relative positioning, if you will, of the return of the portfolios. So the 10-year numbers look great, but you know, sometimes we're stuck with, okay, where are we in these 5-year cycles? And if we look at rolling five-year numbers for the last 4 years, ending in December of 2010, very similar, overall results also. Ending in 2012, on page six. If you look at the upper left-hand graph, you can see that pretty much all together there from the standpoint of return over the last 5 years. Over the previous 5 years, spreading out a little bit more. As you get back into when the market really got hammered and you're looking at coming out of it in December of 2010, there's a significant advantage to having the additional diversification as with the market went through that significant downturn and then as it came out of it. And the same thing through December 2009. Returns were significantly lower over the 2009 because that was basically at the bottom of what was happening.
What is the risk picture?
Well, that's the standard deviation and the overall variance, if you will, or standard deviation of. Yeah, this is all historical.
I'm talking about the underlying asset. I mean, is there an allocation of risk that you can measure with?
Well, this is the overall, the standard deviation is the overall risk profile.
You're doing price on that.
I'm doing what?
You're doing price. You're measuring how much the value of it.
Well, we're measuring how much the return is, but we're also measuring how much it varied. Over that time.
So further to the right is riskier, and
yes.
They're all about the same distance to the right is what you're saying.
I'm saying there's not a lot of difference.
Higher is better, and further to the left is better, but
that's
they're
right.
All to the right, so the highest one.
Yeah, there's not a lot of differentiation from the standpoint of variability. So it's better to take, usually if you got something that's way to the left, and you got to get, to get 1% higher, you got to go 5% to the right. You don't want to do that. But if you can trade off, getting an extra couple percent for another percent or a percent and a half or whatever of risk, or even 2% because of one-to-one ratio, you're going to be better off taking the higher return. And that, looking at even the earlier years from the standpoint of page 8, you get the same type of relative performance. And the one that really, stands out, if you will, are the ones before the big downturn that hit. And the downturn started in 2007, but in the upper right-hand corner, 2007, 2008 includes part of that downturn, the big part of the downturn.
The 8th is when it really happened.
Yeah.
That's when it really hit. 2008.
That's right. And then in 2007, before it hit, more, quote-unquote, normal time frames, you can see that the overall return and variability were very consistent from the standpoint of the various allocations.
Yeah, and let me say, when I'm talking about risk, I'm not talking about measuring the values over the history compared to others. That's not what I'm talking about, risk. We've gotten into a little more exotic type instruments, MLP, for example.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, that asset that we own, what is the risk assessment or risk picture of that asset? The government used to be AAA, best credit rating, and now it's not. I think we're supposed to be getting it back soon, I don't know when. And so, in other words, we're going to try to get our yield up, we obviously need it like everybody else, and we're going to do some things creative and carefully, but I just don't want us to lose back, I don't want us to lose the risk, because that investment policy was written, a lot of it was written about risk and not taking so much risk.
Right.
And so we don't want to get lopsided into chasing yield, and we've got too much risk while we're going after that yield.
Right.
That's just something we got to be careful of. And I think we should risk assess some of the stuff as well. Because that gives a good picture of what happened and how well they've managed it to make it a better product to buy.
Well, the real but I guess meat behind all of this is that in and of themselves, singly, there can be a lot of risk and volatility. But how do they fit together? And it's a correlation enduring market cycles. If one goes up or one goes down, does another one go up, which tends to mitigate the overall risk then to the portfolio? And that's what this is attempting to answer, is that, yeah, you may have a very volatile, two volatile assets, but if they work in opposite directions during that market cycle and both of them have an upward bias, then your overall volatility of the total portfolio is lessened. And that's what, this combination is trying to come up with.
And I hear what you're saying, and again, that's on the valuation analysis. I'm talking about, what if one of these deals fails? What is the risk in that? That's kind of the risk I'm talking about. Are these all investment grade?
I think,
and if they are they, what are the rated and those kind of things?
The question kind of goes to the need of how do you measure risk? And historically, people have tried to say, well, it's the standard deviation. But then I don't know that that's really the true best measure of risk. I mean, we could get a bunch of PhDs in here. They talk about this for 3 or 4. Oh, they're at Jackson Hole. Never mind. But it's kind of like what's your maximum downside there?
I think that's where he's
trying to get with here.
Each one of these asset categories is different.
That's right.
Yeah. The small cap is going to be a whole lot more possible potential loss of dollar value than one like the large cap. The fixed income loss principle is going to be less than it is with the small cap, but it's already stood. But the returns are less too.
That seems to be what gets us, is that there seems to be this risk return trade-off.
It's just there.
It's just there. I'm telling you.
It seems to always
by definition, work, you get paid for taking risks.
Right.
You can get, what do they call it? You can get risk without return, but it's hard to get return without risk.
Yeah,
right.
You're saying.
Yeah.
And so I guess what I'm saying, Richard, is so that we're seeing this properly, do we actually have apples on each of these four categories? And I would say we probably don't. In other words, the segments here, I mean the symbols.
Right.
Okay, one's current, one's then the target, and the two, and then the average of the 60%. Those are all made up of a lot of different things, because we'd be allocating our assets into different types of investments. And with that are different types of risk.
Right, and what these are based on the total market of those asset classes, okay?
These are all lumped in then.
It's all the 60-40 is the Barclays aggregate.
Okay.
And 60% the Russell 3000, which are basically all traded securities, actively traded securities, large cap, mid cap, small cap.
They haven't done very well, haven't
they? And so that's what that is. Then we add in private equity, for instance, which is the Cambridge private equity index, which is all private equity that comes through, and it lags. That's why we're looking at December here. Huh?
They don't look so good, do they?
Turn to page...
60-40 doesn't.
Oh, no, yeah, but that's, yeah, that contains no private equity.
Okay.
It contains no MLPs. It contains no REITs. Huh?
Private equity seems to be doing good.
Well, if you look at the data that I showed you, there's no rolling 10-year time frame that private equity doesn't significantly outperform public equity by a large margin.
Why do you think that is so?
There have been a couple of studies. Actually, there were some studies done by some accounting firms, auditors or whatever, that ran in and did, we know that private equity says, is it all just financial engineering? And the answer to that was no. That actually the companies that were, after they took them private, they were run better. And so they built their overall, value in the private marketplace, then brought them back out public and were able to capture that additional benefit in the public market. So private firms were actually, perform better and manage better than public funds were before they took them private.
Here's my question on that, though. You're dealing with a private equity average. And
right.
From firm to firm within private equity, is there not great?
Oh, yes. And it's sticky. Unlike the public marketplace, where you do have firms that run up and down and up and down from the standpoint of when they're in phase, out of phase, a lot of these private equity firms that are top above average performers stay above average performers. More of them stay above average than drop down below average.
The
top quartile, and the differences are big.
Well, it's as I said, they're not just investors, they become managers as
right.
well.
Right. And they put their own, and the thing that's
they
really,
have their own money
they have their own money in it, so they're eating their own cooking. And
Some of them.
Yeah.
Not all of them. They'll take that back.
Right. But if we do this, tab 6, I don't want to skip ahead to tab 6, but in there, in tab 6, it just says you were going to bring us something. And I think our willingness to say, well, yeah, we're going to include private equity probably has a lot to do with who the private equity is.
That's right. Absolutely, absolutely right. And that's why in the policy it says 0-2 in a target. Now, whether we get there or you decide, well, we don't like this and we don't like that one, I had thought that I was going to have something for you, but the lawyers said no, not available. And I'll tell you who it was. It was Carlyle. There was a fund of funds of Carlyle's three private equity funds, and Carlyle is one of the best, if not the best, from the standpoint of consistency of returns over the last two decades in the private equity area. Their gross returns in private equity over all of their funds have been right around 30% IRR. It's incredible. The only problem is that they have like a $10 million minimum to get in one of their funds, and the Europe fund maybe a $5 million, and the Asia fund maybe a $5 million. Well, we couldn't touch that. But there was another fund of funds being put together for it, but the unfortunate problem came up is it's not available for public
fundamentalists.
Yes.
Well, I think that's going to be part of the problem is when you get into this where the numbers are smaller, we become like the retail person that's buying something and we're going to have high expenses associated with it.
Well, that's my task and problem to find those, and I would only approach this from the standpoint of a fund of funds because I don't want to give you just one private equity fund. Because then the risk goes up.
Yeah, I agree. Because
so,
you're not comparing to these numbers because these numbers are the average.
Right. So if I can find a, you know, a fund of funds that's got friendly economics, that's what I'm after. And there are some out there. Not many of them that I would bring to you, because most of them that are out there that would serve as something this size, the economics are not friendly.
But you're talking about $1 million at 5%, and to these people, that's a rounding error.
Right.
5% of our
funds. That is right. But combined with our other clients, we may be doing $200 million with a private equity fund of funds. And if that's the case, they'll take $1 million. And it, they will.
Are you doing it with your other clients now?
Oh, yeah. With DFW Airport's had phenomenal returns.
I'd be interested in other committee members' opinion of, do you want to change the investment of policy before you know where you're going with it, or would you be more interested in knowing where we would be going with some of these other investments? Of course, item number 7 is not affected by this, right? Because that's just fixed income you're talking about.
Right.
No, well, it's a hedge fund, if you ask me, but I'm skipping ahead. But back to this, we would only need to act on item number 5 if we were going to act on item number 6, and we really don't have anything suggested yet. Right?
Well, I would also like with item number 5 to actually increase the exposure to MLPs and infrastructure type of assets. What I'm trying to do, and I thought I'd let into it, is if I can move something out of that bond portfolio with something that I believe has inflation protection to it, I want to do that. And I'd like to do it in fairly small steps, and that is move some of it into REITs, some of it into MLPs. I know we take on a little more volatility with those assets, but over longer periods of time, which I hopefully we're looking at, our overall expected return is significantly higher. I mean, right now in fixed income assets, I don't see
it's significantly higher if we achieve the average for those asset classes.
Well, from the MLPs, you're going to achieve those averages because we're doing the indexes.
Yeah.
Well, here's the question I think that would bear on our decision that's important. Is the actuary has mentioned comparing what this plan would take to offload it for administrative and the burden of all. Perhaps we should ask them to tell us, would these types of investments be easier for us to hand off the plan with, or more?
It wouldn't matter from the standpoint of the MLPs and the REITs, because they're 3 days liquid. Okay. It would matter from the standpoint of private equity, because then you've got to find a secondary buyer, and it's a huge market out there now, but it does have a little bit of liquidity.
As I understand our situation, we're being asked to consider changing the asset allocation in our investment policy statement, as outlined in the changes that you've got here. The second part of that is, if we want to do that, then do we want to consider private equity, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So there's really two steps involved.
Right.
How much variance do we have, John, within our, we're currently a 60-40. How much can we vary there? Can we vary 10% or 5%, or could we have?
You're on something else. If you go back to asset allocation,
got our policy statement.
The policy statement we had up there just a minute. There it is.
Yeah, it is.
And you said what we had in black is what we currently have right now.
Right.
With the proposal. So we give ourselves a pretty good range. And that was part of what I think Richard and I were talking about, is even in changing this, it doesn't obligate us to really even make any changes right now. It just sort of sets the stage to potentially make changes as far as things. For instance, we're sort of saying we're going to We want to bring fixed income down to a lower percentage over time, primarily through investing in MLPs and REITs and private equity. But you can see it's 0 to 15%, 0 to 15%, 0 to 10%. So there's no obligation to put anything other than you got a target that you're saying. But those would be decisions of the committee when we decide right. to do it. This just allows the committee to do it. You got to change the policy first before you can make a selection.
Yeah, yeah, and I would, you know, I was hopeful if it looks like yeah this makes sense, then the next step is I got to bring you something that makes sense.
When you say
private equity though, here's the alarming thing to me. Of course, I'm a banker, so I don't know much about private equity. I just hear a lot of people talking about it. The things that I think I know are this. It's a short list. They're not regulated. They can do kind of whatever they want to with the money. And it's really about that person in that entity that you're dealing with. I mean, it's very similar to going yep. to another stockbroker yep. or investment broker. Yep. You're handing money to that person, and after you give it to them, they've got to go to work making a return that's better than average. And they can kind of do what they want to. You know?
The ones I'm talking about, though, from the standpoint of the managers of these fund-to-funds, would be those that are registered with the SEC. I'm not going to do it with somebody that hasn't already taken the steps to register with the SEC and open up their books and records and everything else.
Sure.
So that.
So you would underwrite them then, for us?
Well, we will whatever you want to call it, vet the overall, professional manner in which these assets are. Hell, I have no idea what the, you can't buy prior returns. You can only buy the process that produced those prior returns. And we're trying to find firms and managers that actually have a high probability of replicating.
Sure. Being ahead of the market.
So, I mean, from the standpoint, yep, okay, let's do it. And heck, it may be 6 months. It could possibly even be a year before I run across something that fit. And if it did, then I'd like to bring it in rather than say, hey, I want to change your policy and bring this to you again,
And
quite frankly, what this does is every now and then I just bring in and say, hey, I just want to talk a little bit about.
And we asked you to do that.
Yeah.
We did ask you to do this because we needed to get some yield out there and bring it forward.
Yeah, we're in the fixed income, even if we brought the fixed income into that line, we're at about 30% fixed income right now, so we're clearly within the minimum and maximums. We're a little above the target, which again, that's the future thought, is that we would bring forward to you a decision to perhaps take some money out of the fixed income into the MLPs or REITs or something like that.
I mean, like I said earlier, I was around the last time we had rising interest rates, and I don't know exactly when, but I do know it's going to happen. And when it does, it's a very painful thing to see, those that performance go down, because the only way you recoup that is to hold it to maturity, or you take it and sell it at a loss and try like crazy to find something else you're going to get into.
Yeah, and it's a... The historical interest rate rises after a recession has ended, or let's say the bottom of an interest rate policy has ended, let's say it that way. The incline of increase is very steep historically.
Right.
But I talked to an economist, another person about it, and they said, no, it isn't steep. Well, I looked at the chart. And it looked steep to me, and he gave a big, long explanation about why this is not going to be a steep one this time. You know, guys out there, he's a prophet, not an economist, trying to predict the future now.
I don't, right now there really isn't a lot to say, yeah, we're in a you know, inflationary period, and that's usually the big driver.
Yeah, except when I go to the store and buy something. That's when I feel like we're in inflation.
Yeah.
I think we've had inflation that's been squelched with some of the calculations. And I think the government wants a low cost, but we have to have it to save our financial statement. We owe so much.
Well, if we adopt this policy, we're under no compulsion to change anything that we're doing right now.
That you know, you're
the
still
minimums and maximums are such that
you're still there.
We're still in compliance.
We're still in compliance. So I guess basically, if we adopt this resolution, we are just
we're giving
ourselves enough rope to hang ourselves, but not necessarily hanging ourselves. That will come at a subsequent meeting. Okay. Is there any more discussion that we need to have here? Management's opinion or staff's opinion is that we should do this. Is that correct, John?
I think I'm in support of this type of diversification. It appears, looking at other public funds, Richard, correct me. I mean, of course, there are a lot larger ones, but when you look at Texas even, in the big police and fire funds and things like that, and you look, they have a lot more exposure to the MLPs and the REITs and things like that. What would I call an alternative investments than more than traditional?
I think it makes a lot of sense. It's like a lot of things. It's a good idea if you do it right. It'll be a good idea if you get the right investment to go associated with this. So I think all we're doing, as I said, is we're giving ourselves permission to do something. I think the real decision is going to come in at a subsequent meeting when we evaluate the recommendations that are brought forward to make sure that it is prudent. And again, we're not doing this with 100% of the fund. We're talking five movements. There is one question we would have to get here, though. We have two possibilities, right? Target one and target two.
Well, it was just to show you a progression more than anything else. I think, yeah, you do have both
what
those
you have
possibilities.
Right,
this
is
target one.
Target one, that which would be 5%. Okay. And that's what we're recommending at this point. Do we need any more discussion on this? Are we ready to deal with the resolution? John, would you read the resolution, please?
Okay. Be it resolved that the Retirement Committee of the Brazos River Authority has reviewed and hereby adopts the investment policy for the retirement plan for employees of the Brazos River Authority as presented to the Retirement Committee on August the 19th, 2013.
So moved.
We have a second.
Second.
A motion and a second. Would you please poll the committee?
Director Rankin?
Yes.
Director Bell?
Yes.
Director Dennis?
Yes.
Director Christian?
Yes.
Mr. Collinsworth?
Yes.
Mr. Forte?
Yes.
Mr. Wheels?
Yes.
All right. Now,